I guess I'll just start off by asking a little bit about your recent trip to Haiti. What I guess the goal of the delegation was, and who it was that you met with.
Well, I have to say it was a very, very comprehensive exposure within a very short period of time, obviously. And there's nothing more dangerous than a politician or anyone else who says, on the basis of spending 4 days in any country, you suddenly, you know, have all of the insights. But it was a very broad exposure. It was an all-party delegation, although, interestingly, the Liberals chose not to send anybody, and I can't answer for them as to why they would do that. But there was a representative, myself, of course, from the NDP as the foreign affairs critic, and two other members of the foreign affairs committee, which has not met yet but is about to in this new parliament, one from the Conservatives, one from the Bloc. The invitation was extended by foreign affairs almost literally at the 11th hour. In fact, I had to really scramble to decide whether to go. But for me, it was a really welcome opportunity. And actually, I have no way of knowing this, but in part, I think it was the response to my persistence both at the Foreign Affairs Committee in the fall to try to get the minister and senior officials before the parliamentary committee to answer questions about Canada's role in Haiti. And secondly, I had written a letter very soon after the election to the foreign affairs minister to urge that there be an all-party delegation go to Haiti to really meet with President-designate René Préval and to try to get a sense of civil society, of Canada's role in a variety of different areas, with a view to having a better firsthand understanding of what it is Canada can do to really support the new president and the new parliament, which has now been elected.
Okay, so the main purpose of the visit was mainly sort of exploratory or more so diplomatic in nature?
Well, very typically, you know, the kind of delegation that a parliamentary, all-party parliamentary committee will take with a view to getting a first-hand understanding of what is happening. My own very strong conviction is that Canada needs to stay the course in Haiti to continue a lot of very, very good work that's going on, and I did get to see that firsthand. Some of my impressions about Haiti were very strongly reinforced, and some of my I think fairly strongly held views, I have to say, were challenged somewhat, and I think there are a lot of changes in the situation as a result of this this recent election. But the real test is whether Haiti is going to go through another period of tremendous economic hardship and further political chaos, because the self-determination and the sovereignty of Haiti is not respected. Or conversely, I think with this, you know, new opening, this democratically elected government that now is going to be inaugurated on May 14th, I think there's a real opportunity for some serious and important, long overdue building to take place in terms of parliamentary, judicial, economic, and security infrastructure, all of which are desperately needed.
Okay, and just in talking about the some of the rebuilding of the judicial infrastructure, I understand that you had requested a meeting with Yvonne Neptune and Soane, two so-called prisoners of conscience, according to Amnesty International. What is your understanding of, I guess, the judicial and prison system in Haiti, given the fact that Canada has been so outspoken about its very prominent role in both the corrections system and overseeing the judicial reform programs for over the last 2 years?
You know, it's very important to try to realize that, you know, you go to a country for 4 or 5 days and you're seeing a snapshot at that moment in time. But the reality is that there is practically no regime of upholding or respecting rule of law or, you know, human rights and civil liberties. The judiciary is virtually non-existent. I have never seen a prison of any kind as shocking and alarming as the one that we visited, and nobody tried to hide that from us. You're talking about a situation where, you know, to talk about it being in a state of collapse, I don't know whether it ever existed, but it's only just barely now moving in the direction that you could call some kind of reform. And it literally starts with something as fundamental as sorting out who is in prison for what reason and what kind of justice has in any way remotely been brought to bear on dealing with prisoners of every kind. I mean, I think it's hard for us as Canadians to even imagine that you could have political prisoners we're not talking just the same penitentiary, we're talking in the same crowded cell as somebody who is there because they may have stolen a chicken for a hungry family and someone else who may have committed murder. I mean, it is hard for us to get our heads around that. Having said that, I will say that the Canadian representatives who were there working to build the kind of information base and help create the kind of processes necessary were truly impressive. I mean, in terms of their sensitivity, their respectfulness, and I guess what I kept coming back to as a test in my own mind of what is the appropriate role for Canada is whether the many different people I met doing work in so many different domains were truly sensitive to and respectful of Haitians as individual people, but also Haiti as a nation with a right to self-determination and a clear sense that the sovereignty of Haiti really matters. And I was really very, very gratified to see how much that was just very important to pretty well everyone with whom we met. Is that reflective of the attitude of every single person that's there? I wouldn't have any way of knowing, you know, and I couldn't make that statement. But I was really profoundly impressed with the kind of dedication, the competence, the kind of sensitivity that I saw with Canadians in many different spheres working hand-in-hand with Haitians to try to really build, in some cases, in other cases, repair the kind of broad infrastructure that a modern state depends upon.
Now,
and there's no question that, you know, the state of the economy is utterly, utterly horrifying. I mean, you know, we visited one of the worst sweatshops that I could imagine, and disgracefully, in my view, of a Canadian firm.
This was a Gildan factory?
That's right. That's right. And, you know, there's no question that the only reason why people would work under those conditions is because there's not a single alternative available to them, or they would not be working under those conditions. And it's also clear that not one of them would be working, period, if there were any such thing as, you know, a progressive force, whether it's parliamentarians or a union or civil society, helping to organize to improve the conditions. So these are really challenging situations, and as abhorrent as it is to imagine people living under those conditions, those are the conditions under which they're living, and the challenge to the international community, in our case we can only account for our own conduct as Canadians, is to figure out how to keep working to build up the economic opportunities and the judicial security infrastructure and the parliamentary system that will provide for some decent human standards, provide for some semblance of democracy. And it may be hard after I've expressed my horror at some of the conditions to explain why I felt that there was a genuine sense of hopefulness being expressed in many, many quarters. I mean, the level of participation in those elections was truly breathtaking, given all the reasons people would have for not voting, you know, the instances of having voted and it didn't, in the end, the outcome didn't get respected and didn't count for anything, but one could see, and, you know, graffiti tells you a lot of graffiti on the walls everywhere in terms of expressing the support for the new president, and I don't know whether it was a stroke of genius or whether it captured what was already being felt by people for that new party to be called L'Espoir, which is hope, but it was being cheerfully expressed by amazing numbers of people. The other thing that was a very interesting part, and I'm not sure it was even originally anticipated, but that got built in because it was an itinerary thrown together very quickly, is that we did have some exposure to the Canadians who were there as election observers and had, you know, very open opportunity to chat with them as individuals and as a group, and in fact traveled back on the same plane with many of them. You know, in comparison to a fair amount of chaos that reigned in a small number of situations, despite the 63% voter turnout in the first round of elections, this time there were only one or two situations in which there were clear incidents, you know, really serious incidents at the polls. But by and large, and we visited about, remember exactly, 7 or 8 polls, you know, spread out in different parts of Port-au-Prince. And it was a joyful event. I mean, it was unbelievable how highly organized. It was impressive. It was entirely Haitians who were, you know, setting up the polls and providing the checks and balances to make sure the electors' rights were being respected and upheld and so on. And there was a genuine sense of they got it together. They really know what they're doing here, and I think Canada takes some should take some pride in the fact that some of the infrastructure going into that really was provided by Canada, not only Canada, but Canada was part of a 9-country council that helped to put some of that infrastructure together. But you had a real sense of empowerment that, you know, people now knew exactly what to do and how to do it, and they've registered 3.5 million voters, and they need to get on with moving to the next level. But there was an overall sense of kind of satisfaction that there was a high degree of participation and a truly democratic outcome that I think can't be contested. So that's something, you know, that's something to build on. But now we need to make sure the international community, on the one hand, absolutely respects the sovereignty and self-determination of Haitians, but on the other hand, is there to support economically and in terms of, you know, competence to help with parliamentary processes getting set up and running, judicial reform, penal reform, and, most importantly of all, real economic development.
I'd just like to get back to the issue of judicial reform for one moment. The one issue that I suppose a number of researchers and organizations have pointed out about the international community's partner organizations with a judicial reform process, among them, many of them are those who very much supported the coup of democratically elected leader Jean-Bertrand Aristide. One example being the Forum Citoyen, which CIDA has announced at least 2 to 3 aid programs which are funding. Forum Citoyen is a coordinating member of the Group 184, which is owned, well, directed by André Appel, who contracts the Gildan factory that I believe you might have visited during your,
right,
your visit.
Right.
So, I mean, the concern is, of course, that these are organizations that do not seem to have very much respect for the Haitian constitution. Another group also being the Haitian Judges Association, the director of which just recently struck down the arrest of 7 police officers who were arrested for participating in the Maltissant massacre on August 27th. So I guess I wonder if any of the concerns about the partner organizations that Canadian Aid seems to be funding was addressed during your delegation.
You know, I would have to say that there are a lot of reasons to be very, very, very discouraged and pessimistic about what may be the intentions of some who have participated, you know, in the Committee of 184 would be an example. But at the same time, I have to say that I was extremely impressed by Preval's quiet determination, by how open he was with both his time and his sentiments. There is a real sense of understanding that Canada is seriously committed to trying to work in support of the Preval duly elected government now to be there to try to assist in Haiti carrying out its you know, political and economic affairs and its judicial affairs. You know, it was really quite heartening to see that Preval, while obviously pleased with many things about the outcome, was also very frank and direct about how massive the challenges are that they face, and how strongly he indicated that he was looking to Canada to stay the course and help through some of these difficult times. So they're huge challenges. I mean, there's no question that there's massive further, not just training, but, you know, further weeding out of the Haitian National Police. There are real challenges about providing the security needed to get on with the economic development and the humanitarian programs. But to just about the last person, I was very impressed, and I felt the Canadians would be proud, but most importantly, that Haitians were expressing the sense of feeling well served by some of our military who were there, some of the police who were there to participate in the reform, and a genuine sense of partnership and solidarity went far beyond what I had dared to hope would exist. Now, having said that, very early days, you know, Preval is not yet sworn into office, and he is coming to Canada, which is, I think, important symbolically and substantively in the next while, which is a further opportunity for him to speak frankly. And sometimes he will do so privately, and sometimes he'll do so very publicly, I'm sure, about what Haiti looks to Canada and hopes that Canada will be able to deliver. I mean, it's almost beyond belief, really. It's almost overwhelming to think of the magnitude of the task that he faces. But I think first and foremost, we've got to respect the sovereignty and the self-determination, and respect the sense of hope and promise of Haitians that this is a new chapter, and that we need to be there to help them build from here.
Mm-hmm.
One of the things that was very clear is how much people really want to see this as, you know, as charting a new course. And there are big wounds, there are deep wounds to be, you know, to be healed. And I, you know, Haiti will have to decide how it wants to deal with what it seems to me, whatever name you put on it, some sort of truth and reconciliation process to move beyond where there are still some major issues needing to be resolved. But I came back feeling far more optimistic than I imagined that I would.
I guess just in talking about the idea of a truth and reconciliation process, you've just on the eve of Preval's expected visit this weekend to Canada screened a controversial film, Aristide and the Endless Revolution, on Parliament Hill.
Right.
And this is a film that, of course, paints a somewhat critical picture of the departure, the international community's role, particularly the United States' role in the departure of Aristide. Now, given the fact that Canadian forces were known to have been securing the airport when Aristide was removed from the country on a U.S. chartered jet, do you believe that the international community itself has a role to play in its own commission of inquiry of its actions within Haiti over the past 2 years?
What I believe is that the new president and the new parliament need to be respected and supported in terms of how they go about charting this course. It would be very presumptuous of me, and I think of Canadians, whether they're well-informed, as many are, or not informed at all, to be saying what should be done about some of the horrors of the past that still need to be addressed. clearly a huge problem that is about to be addressed, as I understand it, is the understandable alienation that was created between Canada and other countries and CARICOM, you know, the organization representing Caribbean nations, as a result of the illegal removal of Aristide. And, you know, the reason why I felt that film was important for people to see here, I mean, here on Parliament Hill, is because it's part of a very ugly history that needs to be understood. At the same time, what I think there was a real feeling about is that, you know, the upcoming donors conference in Brazil is an important opportunity for the international community to be challenged, to make commitments. The upcoming meetings of CARICOM, where they will decide whether to readmit Haiti to the membership of CARICOM and put this chapter behind. You know, all of these things are important new chapters, and how the Haitian people decide and their newly elected government decides to deal with some of these real raw wounds will be very important, but pretty presumptuous of us to say how they should do that.
All right, Ms.
I'm sorry that I need to get to
Parliament.
Really pleased to have a chance to talk with you, and it's going to be a very interesting and, I think, challenging opportunity for Preval to be here. It was a great privilege to meet with him and experience his candor. It also was and I'm going to finish on this note, it was quite thrilling the extent to which Haitians felt very honored by the fact that our Governor General is a Haitian-Canadian,
mm-hmm.
who looks forward to being at that inauguration.